Ding dong merrily on high, the SAFTAcast is starting. Hi everybody and welcome to the SAFTAcast, I'm your host Scott C. We got a great episode for you, but before we get into that, as always, a little bit of news and information for you. Kicking it off, first and foremost, a reminder about our upcoming quasi-sort of holiday hiatus here on the program. Excuse me, I gotta burp real quick. There we go. Thank you very much. Next week is the week of the Christmas holiday, the Mass of the Christ Child, the whatever you want to call it. We are not going to have a full show next week. Indeed, we are going to be doing, though, a special little bonus episode dropping, I believe, Monday the 22nd. It features no guests. It's a mini episode, only a half hour long thereabouts, featuring me talking to you about Christmas music. Indeed, we are going to tackle the seven most depressing Christmas songs, well, seven of the most depressing Christmas songs, as well as talk a little bit about where the holiday depression Christmas genre is and what it's all about and everything. Believe it or not, it's actually much more complicated than you think. That's coming up next Monday, so you can get a listen to that while you're doing your final preparations for the holiday season. No matter what you celebrate, they're all kind of confluenced and lumped together at the same 10 days or so thereabouts. Then the week of New Year's, a week afterwards on the 29th or 30th, we haven't decided yet, we're going to drop a small, short, maybe 5-6 minute New Year's message for you, just to keep things going here on the SAFTAcast. Then in January, we will return to our regularly scheduled style and programming, which is kind of what we got coming up today. But before I do, hey, I got a Christmas idea gift for you. Christmas gift idea, I rather should say. Boy, my syntax work no well. Good. I'm busy. I got a lot on my mind. What do you expect? It's the holidays. I got a great idea for a holiday gift for you, and it comes right from the Sundress Academy for the Arts. The 2015 Sundress Calendar is now available in pre-sale for $20. If you order right now, you may not get it in time for Christmas, but you'll definitely get it in time for the start of 2015. The 2015 calendar is a great calendar. It features gender-swapped versions of literary characters, including Theodore of Oz, Attica Finch, Alex in Wonderland, Jane Hook, and much, much more. You want to get a hold of this? I can tell you how to do that. You just go on over to Sundress Publications, click on Store, that'll send you to our Square Up page, and there you can see it right there, the 2015 Sundress/SAFTA calendar. Check this one out. You want to get it and hang it up in many places in your house. You'll want to swap places for it. You'll want to put it in your kitchen. Then maybe you'll want to put it in your bathroom. Then maybe you'll want to put it in your office. Maybe then you'll put it on the outside of your house. You can even take off the past months and wallpaper or something with, I don't know. However you use your calendars. I use mine to remind me of days. And speaking of reminding of days, that's a terrible segue, but here we go. Today's episode is the one and the only. Nicole Aquindo is on the program, and we chat about a lot of nerdy stuff today, including dark comedy, teaching drama, you know, teaching theatrical drama, comic books, how to avoid cliches, body mods, dressing for success. We cover a whole wide range of things, and it is a hilarious podcast with the one and the only Nicole Aquindo, because she is truly a fun guest to have on the program, and I know you're going to enjoy it. But first, our holiday theme song. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Oh, why are you thanking me? I mean, you know, I haven't done anything yet.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
So let's get right into it. I got the burning question that is on everybody's mind right now.
Sure.
You ready for it?
I'm braced. I'm sitting down.
Okay. Because that was a very seductive yes at the same time. That
I try my best.
Trying to outdo one of our previous guests last month who was... comment was like, I am very seductive on radio. I'm like, yes, you are.
I think I heard that. It was very sultry.
It was very sultry. I found myself having to put on the air conditioning immediately after the interview.
I'm fanning myself, frankly.
All right, so burning question on everybody's mind. what is your least favorite holiday activity, chore, or tradition?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I don't know about you or anybody else that you know. I have a really weird problem opening presents in front of people. And I don't know why that is. I just feel like it would make my life a lot easier if, like, you know, around Christmas time or whatever it is that people celebrate, whoever you are, like, if I got the thing, if I could just walk away to a private room and open my gifts and react to them in secret and then actually come out and thank everyone instead of having to have this weird obligation of opening things, I don't know, like, while people are looking at me. I hate it. Of course I love what you got me. I don't need to open it to know, but, you know.
What if you hate the gift?
I have never in my life gotten a gift I hate. I know that's I'm setting the bar, you know, in a really weird way, and I'm sort of inviting people to try to send me things I hate. But I don't know. Challenge accepted. I don't know. It's weird. It's like I just think that it's really kind to think of someone regardless of what it is that you give them. And so, just for me, maybe I'm weird. Other people get things they hate. That's cool.
I mean, the worst thing I could think to give somebody would be a bottle of mouthwash.
I could use the mouthwash. See, that's the thing. I'm like, oh God, even if it's practical, I could handle it. It would be fine. I think a giant bag of just dog crap. I mean, that would be awful. I guess I would hate that.
Mental
as far as serious gifts go, you know, I don't know.
I mean, the Safta Cat here, it's like a miniature racehorse. You have to clean out his litter box every 2 days.
That's really gross. That's really gross.
I mean, I took it to the vet and the vet was like, there's nothing wrong with him. I'm like, you just got a poop cat. I'm like, okay.
You know, if I knew that we were going to sort of divert to talking about poop, I really would have, like, made this into a drinking game or some kind of bit. Like, how long would the conversation have to have gone on before the poop talk started? We made it to about 2 minutes and 45 seconds. So
before we go right into the shit.
I mean, that was quick. That was really quick, I've got to say.
This interview is over now because I really don't know where you go from talking about shit, you know?
If you start there, I mean, I don't know. Like, usually there's other foreplay involved. I don't go straight to that, but, you know, today, that's where it is. That's what happened.
Maybe I'm just backed up or something, you know? I swear this has never happened to me before.
This is a serious interview. We're serious writers here.
The Safta Cast has always been serious.
Of course.
3 minutes in, we're talking shit. I love it.
I'm talking shit pretty much most of the day, so we've really just caught up. So this is good.
If you haven't received shit, have you ever given shit to someone? I mean, not literal shit, but have you ever purposely given a crappy gift to somebody?
I don't think so. I have given frustrating gifts, like, oh, I don't like this person very much, and I don't really know what they like, so what could I possibly do?
But, so you just stop off at a CVS or a Walgreens and get something.
Last Valentine's Day, I have a very dear friend that, as a joke, went to CVS and bought one of every crappy CVS Valentine's Day gift and sort of left them around the house for me to find. But see, even then, the crappiness was very, it was very sweet. And I didn't mind.
That's true friendship right there.
Oh, yeah. I still have my light-up frog with the little hearts on it. My Iron Man Valentine's Day card. That was good.
I did that for my wife a few years ago. I bought one of those packs of kids' Valentines and just sprinkled them all over the house.
Oh, that, I would have done that, too. I mean, frankly, I'm in love with your wife also, and so I would have done a similar thing.
Okay, so let's recap the show so far. 5 minutes in, we've been talking about shit, and now we're talking about my wife and being in love with her.
I no apologies here. What's funny, too, is I've got my Men of Sundress calendar right next to my desk as well. I'm doing the interview in my office, and I'm looking at December, just kind of smiling. So,
and for those who don't know the calendar, I just happen to be Mr. December there.
It's pretty great. My mom was visiting last week, and she was sleeping in this office, and she did not realize what the calendar was doing. She just was kind of sitting at my desk and looked up at the picture and was like, huh, he looks pretty good. And just went about her day. You've got my mother's approval as well.
The story behind that dress is that we were looking for one, my wife and I, and we were looking at various ones, trying to find one that fit my frame and all that. And this middle-aged, maybe 50s-year-old woman sitting next to us says, very politely,
excuse me, I don't mean to ask, but what are you doing? And we explained it's for a charity calendar and all that, and they're having the men of the organization dress in dresses. And she was like, that is a brilliant idea. And then she goes diving in looking for the dress. And she found it. So,
I was hoping that you bought it just for the photo. I mean, I really was.
We did. And then here's the scary thing. It fit my wife perfectly.
It's a good Christmas dress. I mean, I'm glad that both of you can share it. It's excellent. Excellent choice.
I agree. I'm sad I won't be a part of 2015's calendar.
Oh, are you unable to?
Yeah, schedule was just not going to happen this time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, 2016.
It's something to look forward to. I'm gonna have the calendar in 2016, and maybe we'll have another conversation like this, and I can look up at it, and you'll look down at me with your, you know, over the glasses gaze, and it'll work out.
My seductive Christmas gaze.
It was as seductive as my yes earlier. I think that both of those things together, it's just, I don't know. It's hot heat here, guys. Watch out.
Can only wonder what we're gonna be like at the 36-minute mark on this show today. Shows like this make me wonder how long it's going to be before we're thrown off the air.
Yeah, and I mean, there are plenty of writers and artists out there. I mean, there's really no shortage of that, so.
Nope.
The funny ones, though. Actually snagging the funny ones. That's going to probably be tough, but.
Yeah, it's finding the interesting ones, but everybody's cool in their own way, I find.
That's true. You know, it's funny, too, though. Like, I was thinking about this. Like, oh my gosh, I've never actually done an interview like this or a conversation like this before. I'm going to call it a conversation because then I won't have a panic attack. and so I just kind of smiled and, you know, I told myself that I would just act as if you were just sitting here in the room because that makes it a little bit easier. The calendar made it even easier once I noticed that. I taught this morning and I've got to say, I prepped for that. And then I sort of didn't prep for this because I figured the conversation would happen organically, you know.
We're talking on a Saturday. You said you're teaching this morning?
Yeah. I teach Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday right now. One of those weird blocks that nobody has but me. And that's totally fine. I'm done in the morning. It's not a big deal. I love my job. I'm not complaining or anything like that. But it's tough getting them wanting to do stuff on a Saturday. It really is.
What do you teach on a Saturday?
I am teaching a comedy and tragedy creative writing course. The first part of it is all about sad stuff, but the second part of it is all about making each other laugh. And so once we get through the beginning and everybody wants to cry every time they leave, it actually works out pretty well. So we end on a positive note, and we've only got a couple of weeks left, so that'll be good.
What comedies are you teaching them?
Oh, right now, actually, oh my gosh, I don't have the list in front of me. Right now, we're actually studying the Raising Arizona script, which I'm really excited about. Because I don't know, it's really weird. I don't want to stereotype my students. But at the very beginning of the course, it's really interesting because a lot of the time they sort of have this weird problem. Like, I don't know how to be funny other than, you know, telling jokes. I'm generally a really serious writer, and so... one of the reasons why I teach that script for anybody that has not actually seen the film Raising Arizona, there's the whole film is about, you know, stealing a baby and sort of like, you know, all the hilarity that ensues when you've stolen a baby and somebody dies. There's death, there's jailbreaking, a body is exploded with a grenade. I mean, all sorts of things happen that, you know, without the funny context, like if you were just sort of talking like, oh, my baby got kidnapped, you know, people would be like, oh, God, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Why are we laughing about this? But you can totally bring that seriousness to the table and make the comedy even more funny. So that's what we sort of try to work with as we go, you know, like taking a serious situation and, you know, flipping it into something that we can laugh about. And it works.
Is that the type of comedy that you generally go for?
For me personally, absolutely. And it's tough too. I mean, I'm sure you know, and just tons of teachers and people that also write. I'm sorry, writers that also happen to teach. Let me reverse that. And it's weird because you've got to be really good at, you know, teaching people how to do things that you might not necessarily love. You know, like I don't love the style of, you know, every single thing that my students produce, for example, but I've got to be able to give them good feedback regardless of that. And, you know, it's the same with being an editor too. I have lots of hats that I have to wear. And, you know, even if I don't love the particular manuscript that I'm reading, or not love it necessarily, but if it's in a style that I don't necessarily love, you know, I can still give good feedback and things like that. I think that's an important trait.
Disassociation.
Yeah. You know, because it's my favorite writing in the whole world is like, you know, just the weird hybrid, like the stranger the better, like give me the unclassifiable, like I like to sleep with that kind of stuff, you know, next to me in bed, you know, the weirder the better, honestly. Like if it's strange, if part of it's in another language, just I can't get enough of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, but that's one thing. But I mean, you know, you got to be good at reading everything, I think. It makes you a better writer.
Where are the roots in that, do you think, in your life? Were you always, like, as a child, attracted to the weird stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I mean, I've always sort of been the kind of person where, you know, like, it doesn't really matter, like, the choices that you made in your life. Like, we can still be friends no matter who you are, I think. And I don't know. I think that especially writers that, you know, they don't sell a lot because what they're writing is just sort of, like, inaccessible to a mass market. I don't know. They deserve love too. They deserve readers and attention and, you know, people to talk about them. And so I sort of like to celebrate that. I like to celebrate, you know, what's weird and what people don't normally talk about because it's important.
Like Raising Arizona.
You know. I mean, look, that's different. That's a teaching tool. I don't know. I am going to revamp the class that I'm teaching for next semester, and I might introduce some more of this weird stuff, but I got to be careful, like, not to throw my own sensibilities in the ring, I think, too soon.
The problem with teaching comedy is that it's such a subjective thing.
Absolutely. That's definitely, well, tragedy too, because yeah, it's a comedy and tragedy course at the same time. And so both of those things are so hard. And we spend a lot of the beginning of the class in really internalizing the fact that not everything, you know, like what you would think is sad is different from what I would think is sad. And, you know, what you would think is funny is maybe different from, you know, what I would think is funny. It is so subjective. I don't know. Just because this goes back to some Vivian Gornick stuff. The situation and the story, like you can have a sad situation, but the story not mean anything. Like just because somebody dies, for example, or just because, you know, a dog gets hit by a car. I mean, yeah, like this stuff is really sad. But, you know, in order for that sadness to really resonate with the audience, there has to be some things in there that the audience can, you know, follow along with and, you know, really care about. I mean, I guess it's the difference, you know, between, you know, the audience feeling sad for a second and then sort of putting it away and forgetting about it. You know, you could do that, or you could work a little bit harder and, you know, you'll have something that'll actually resonate and people will continue talking about after it's over.
Yeah, comedy is difficult to teach, I've found.
Oh, yeah. What is your experience with that? Since I'm turning it around on you now.
Oh, my. Well, I generally, you know, I teach intro to lit, and I always try to, you know, I end on drama. Because to me, drama is the highest of the three major genres, because it incorporates both fiction and prose. I mean, prose and poetry. Excuse me, I misspoke. So to me, it's the supreme level. And this, I know I'm biased. I didn't start out as a poet. I was an actor and theater person as a kid and into my teens and early college. So I have that background going in. But to me, it's the highest form of writing because it incorporates all the different genres into one form. And so I always end, though, with Oscar Wilde, The Importance of Being Earnest.
Okay.
Generally, that's an easy one for students to just kick back and laugh with. And the majority of my students see, okay, there's some funny lines in here. There's some naughty jokes, though I have to point them out to them. Like, well, actually, this is kind of a naughty joke here. And
it's interesting how those meanings get lost over time. Well, we have to sort of translate for them, even though it's in the same language.
Part of it is what I tell them right at the beginning of the unit. This is not meant to be read. The only people who look at the script are the actors and the director. You're the audience. You don't get to look at this. And so to understand drama, you have to see it. And that's where it gets lost. It's lost in translation. I often bring up Shakespeare is full of filth, but you don't know that unless you see it performed.
Absolutely. It is really tricky trying to, you know, teach that. I have a lot of difficulty with it, but I think it's really, really rewarding by the end because, you know, you've got people that, you know, they're funny in real life, but they have no idea how to do it on the page. So it's just really cool to see that kind of development happen by the end. But yeah, I know one of the cool assignments that I like to do with them, because I mean, for me, I try to have everybody forget that we're in a classroom. I like to just, you know, we're a bunch of writers sitting in a room. We all want the same thing. So, you know, let's talk like that instead of having me, you know, sit up at the front making noises nobody's paying attention to. But one of the things that I like to do towards the end is have a comedic story circle. And that's a formal way of talking about some of the funniest things that have ever happened to us in life. And it is one of the best days. Every single time I teach the class, it's just getting to sit there and share, you know, what is the funniest thing that has ever happened to you? And I hear some great stuff. I hear some great stuff.
I kind of admire you because I don't think I could ever teach comedy.
It is hard. I mean, you know, but if you're a good teacher, which I assume you are, you're a great person, so I'm assuming you're a great teacher too. Yeah, you can teach anything. It's just, it doesn't feel right at first. You know what I mean? Like when you're trying on, you know, different clothes that you might not wear all the time. It's just, it's weird.
Yeah, I tried something this spring to help them understand comedy and understand British comedy and sensibilities of, you know, Oscar Wilde and such. I gave them Fawlty Towers, an episode of that, and I was really, I didn't know what my students would think. I'm like, okay, 1970s British comedy. I don't know if they can handle it. I showed them one episode, and the whole class was losing it.
That's awesome. That's very, very cool. I had a really just, I don't know where it came from, but it was this really unfounded bias against any British television of any kind until about 4 years ago. And my eyes were opened. I'll leave it at that.
By what?
Oh, gosh. I started watching Sherlock. I am not embarrassed to talk about this. I have an unhealthy obsession with Sherlock. Then I started watching Doctor Who and lots of other stuff.
Say no more.
I'm in my Sherlock t-shirt underneath my professional jacket. So I think I'm doing, I don't know, it's weird. It's like when you wear like the concert t-shirt to the concert. I realized that I was talking about this and I looked down. I'm like, oh, I'm wearing this shirt. I'm such a nerd, but I don't care.
No, let your geek flag fly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No shame. No shame. I got to remind myself once in a while, no shame. But
I found that, I don't know if this is true for you, but in my mid-20s, that's when I stopped caring.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels real good, huh? It's pretty much the best ever. I don't know. Like I kind of wish I could rewind and sort of do grad school over again because, you know, the whole giving a shit thing, it's interesting when you don't and you sort of operate without, you know, like these self-imposed limitations. It's a pretty cool way to live, I gotta say.
I think two things happened. One is that the nerd and the geek became a little more social acceptable. And two was just aging and realizing nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, I don't know, for me, anytime I've ever felt insecure about, you know, something I really liked or something I did, I think back on it now, and I guess that insecurity is totally based upon this assumption that other people care enough about what I'm actually doing to, you know, criticize it. And, you know, like you were saying, like, nobody gives a shit. So why would I feel weird? And that was really liberating as far as life is concerned, but it also was really liberating as far as my writing is concerned too. And I think that has a lot to do with the whole, like, give me the weirder than the weird, you know, because I kind of stopped caring, which is a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. Except the fact, all right, I'm a nerd about X, and as long as it's not intruding on other people's lives, nobody cares.
I mean, I can't imagine, you know, I mean, maybe playing my video games too loud, but I mean, I can't imagine my nerdy habits ever actually affecting anyone else negatively. I don't know.
Do you ever go on Tumblr?
I mean, well, yeah. But I'm good. I'm good on there. I'm just thinking, I don't know. I think that it lets me connect with my students better, too. Because, oh god, we talked for a half hour today about comic books, and that was pretty awesome. It's an awesome way to fill some time on a Saturday. I subscribe to way too many. I probably need to pare it back a little bit, but I don't know, every Wednesday I get so excited. I get my comic book shipment. I have to go pick it up. It's this really serious thing.
Well now I gotta ask this, all right?
Because
I'm a comic book person, but not really in deep.
Okay.
Never really have been since I was a kid, but I know far more about comics than a person like me should know.
Okay, I feel you on this. we can tread here. We can go. Yeah. Let's do it.
What ones do you have currently that you're subscribing to? What are some of the big ones right now that you're paying attention to?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I subscribe to maybe 30 different titles a month, maybe a little bit more. So listing them would be counterproductive. But the ones that I'm really, really excited about that I keep up with, Thor. I really like the whole, I was about to say Lady Thor, but it's not Lady Thor, it's just Thor. Thor just happens to be a lady right now. And I like Captain America, and I am a huge, huge X-Men fan. huge. Just any X-Men title, I will scoop it up. I will read the hell out of it. Saga, if you have not read Saga, it's so good. So good.
I haven't even heard of it.
Oh my gosh. You know what? It is my favorite non-superhero comic ever.
Who makes it? Marvel, Image?
Oh gosh, I think it's Image. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm 99% sure it's Image. I could, of course, Google it. It's right in front of me. But it came out, I think it started early last year, and it's just some of the best writing that I've seen in a long time. And I'm counting comic books up there with other forms of literature as well, so I would put this on my best of list for, you know, the things that I love this year, comic or not. But yeah, it's pretty fantastic, and there's stuff in there for mature readers as well.
You follow Deadpool at all?
I don't. And I heard that he's doing some crazy thing right now, where he's going back and like recruiting Nazis and doing weird stuff in space-time, in the space-time continuum. I don't know if you know about that.
I know a little bit. I've seen a few pages.
Okay. Yeah, he's, I don't know. It's really weird. For whatever reason, I have never emotionally connected with him, but he's all over the place. Like whenever I go to the comic book store, so maybe I should. I don't know.
He's the big one right now.
I guess they're doing a new movie for him too, right?
With Ryan Reynolds, yeah.
Reynolds, yeah. He's just such a weird, I don't know, weird in a bad way. I don't know. I've also never connected with Ryan Reynolds, so I'm not sure. Sorry, Ryan Reynolds. I'm sure people love you. I'm just not one of those people. Sorry.
It's cool. We all have our likes and dislikes of actors, you know.
I was really surprised because I think it was a couple of days ago they signed, since we were talking about Sherlock earlier, I can let my geek flag fly a little bit here. They cast Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange for the, I think it's coming out in 2016, the Doctor Strange film. I'm really excited about that. I don't know why people are mad. I don't know.
I'm confused about DC's Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Casting
yeah.
Will Smith as Deadshot.
I don't know. Like, there's just something about Will Smith. He hasn't aged in the last 20 years, and he just kind of freaks me out. I think he's a vampire, probably, in real life.
Yeah, like David Bowie.
Yeah, dude. And Keanu Reeves is looking a little older now, but for a while
he's
there.
He's starting to.
Yeah, he was a vampire since, like, the 1980s. He's getting human again.
Well, he was in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I'm so excited you just said that to me. Oh, man. We're good.
Speaking of comics, next year, one of the big one drops is the relaunch of Star Wars. And I was reading something recently that they're projected to sell over 1 million copies on the first issue alone.
Oh, my gosh. I just got chills thinking about that. I mean, yeah, there are going to be people that buy it that are just going to, you know, buy it to have it regardless of how good it is or, you know, how well it's written and how good the art is. But
I'm going to say just personal opinion here, and I recognize I have bias here. I think it's going to be good because the editor on it was a guest on this program. I have an inkling that he might do all right with it.
I'm going to give it a shot. I mean, whenever there's something new, I'll buy the first issue and I will browse and I'll see how I feel about it. I find a lot of new stuff that way that I really like, so I'm sure I'll love it, but, you know, who knows?
If we could put all comics together in your world, who are your top ones, your top characters?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And we're not just talking superhero realm. We can throw in all graphic novel realms into this.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. I just finished reading all of the Dark Tower graphic novel adaptations, and I am such a huge fan of the way that they explored Roland Deschain's character in that series. I don't know if are you a Dark Tower fan at all? Of you,
I've read all the books except the Keyhole one that came out a year ago, and I did read the first. I want to say the first book, A Gunslinger is Born.
It's so cool because, I mean, I don't know, like, there are people that really, really hate flashbacks in that story. One of my dear friends, just, he can't stand when they, especially, oh my gosh, what book was it?
Wizard in Glass.
Yeah. He hated it. It was so hard for him to get through it because he just wanted to, you know, deal with the current storyline and not, you know, think about like the past of the characters or anything like that. But that's one of my favorites in the series. And so the comic books for me, I think there's 7 or 8 graphic novels before they catch up to the events that happen in the first, you know, actual Gunslinger book. So they're all just, I don't know. I laughed, I cried, things happened, I got emotional. I might have thrown the book once or twice going through some of those. They were really good. So yeah, his character has done very, very well, I think.
Okay. Any others?
You know what? Miss Marvel right now, too. I'm kind of disappointed that they're merging the Miss Marvel and She-Hulk comics together, which is a little silly and weird. I might be wrong. They might not be doing that, but I think that's what's going on. Because I thought that She-Hulk was also really, really well written. And I'm just disappointed that I guess it didn't sell enough. So they're not doing it anymore. But that run currently and the current Miss Marvel, I don't know. If you haven't guessed by now, I am really, really excited when female characters are written well and they, you know, have lives that are not revolving around, you know, the men that are telling them what to do.
They pass the Bechdel test, you know. Yes,
exactly, exactly. And yeah, I don't know. I'm all for, you know, especially with comics, because I love to see it on the page instead of just reading it. But, you know, getting lots of different cultures represented and like lots of different types of people represented, it just makes me feel good when I read it. I feel like, you know, I've heard this term recently a lot, but I feel like I'm a good literary citizen when I'm helping to promote work like that.
Do you think that comics are finally starting to come around in that respect?
Marvel, not DC, but... that might be an unfair statement, but I don't know. It's really weird. I read a couple of DC comics, but generally I read most of the Marvel stuff. But Batgirl is a really great example. Like, not the most recent run of Batgirl, but the one right before it. She's overcoming, you know, all this horrible adversity, and, you know, her character is written extremely well. There's tons of character development. Her character psychology is super clear, and they turned her into a drunk grad student who's so irresponsible that she lost her batsuit because it was burnt down. It was just burned up in like a van accident, and she's just drinking and partying. And I'm like, no, why did you do this? Why did you get a different writer? Why did you make this mistake? So yeah, I don't know. They kind of ruined Batgirl for me. It was a sad day.
But you feel like Marvel's picking up on it and saying, hey.
Absolutely. We've got a Muslim Miss Marvel, and we've got, you know, Black Captain America and Thor being a woman right now. I don't know. I think that that's all really cool stuff. And I do know some people that are upset by it, but I think that those people haven't really kept up with some of the more recent issues of the comics, because I don't think it was done in sort of an unnatural way. Like, they're not doing it. They're not being inclusive just for the sake of being inclusive. It's actually ingrained in the storytelling. So it all makes really good sense.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my concern, was that they were doing it to show, look how progressive we are.
Exactly, exactly. And I never got that impression at all, especially with what's going on with Thor right now. I know that people, they were super mad, like, you can't have Thor be a woman, but it's not even the first time that Thor has been a woman. Thor has been a dinosaur. Thor has been all kinds of things.
Wasn't Thor a duck at one point?
That I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. But I just remember Dinosaur Thor from, you know, like 20 years ago or whatever. But yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I think that for those of you that would like to read about why Thor lost his hammer and is now female Thor, you can read the Original Sin Marvel storyline from over the summer. It's pretty good.
Would you like to know more? That's a geek reference.
I mean, I'm talking about it. I mean, if it's interesting, well, they may as well know where to find it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, is I'm concerned that they were doing it to show, look how progressive we are, rather than being sincere about it.
Yeah, I was worried about it a little bit, too. You know, it's fair. We're friends. I can say that kind of stuff now. But it did worry me at first.
Once you talk about shit, you're friends for life,
Oh, yeah, we were there. We were there 2 minutes and 30 seconds into the conversation. Actually, I think the Original Sin storyline is where Captain America and Thor both switched. Yeah, that's right. So somebody whispers a secret into Thor's ear that renders him unable to lift the hammer. And we don't know what that is yet. We're going to find out sometime soon. But so he's going through this, you know, it's a dual storyline comic where he's going through this weird internal struggle about worthiness and, you know, all these other really interesting themes while, you know, the mantle of Thor has been picked up by an unknown female, which is very, very exciting. So we don't know who she is yet either. I have my guesses, but we don't know for sure. Yeah, I think it's his mom. Honestly, but we'll see. We'll see.
Maybe that was the secret.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Your mom and dad had sex.
Oh.
Thor does not like to think of his parents doing things.
Spoiler alert, Thor, you came from somewhere.
Thor is from Cabbage Patch.
Not vagina. Oh my god. I mean, but you know, who's to say what the sexuality of the Asgardians even looks like? You know, I mean, who knows what he saw?
You know, my Norse mythology isn't there, so I don't know how the gods did it. I know that Zeus was a bit of an asshole, but you know, that's Greek.
I think he raped some women as a swan.
Yes, he did.
If I remember correctly.
And if I remember, he also did it as a bull.
Yeah, Loki was a black horse at one point and impregnated a character that was, yeah. Good job, guys. Good job.
These are parts that will not be in the Marvel release. They will be in the adults-only section.
I'm sure there's some crazy fan fiction and art around somewhere in the cesspools of the internet.
I don't think there's a question of whether it exists or not.
That's true. That's true. If we can think of it, it exists.
Rule 34.
Yep.
Back to women in comics.
Sure, sure.
I'm not sure if you're aware of what happened at SDCC this year with Marvel, where they were going to make their big announcements in the afternoon, but in order for people to get into that event, they had to get through an hour presentation from them about women in comic books.
Ooh.
They you know, in order, I forget how they pulled it off, but it was something like, you know, in order to get into this event, you have to be here at this time.
Right.
Otherwise,
right.
You're not going to get a seat. And so what they did for that hour then was, let's have an open forum with women writers and illustrators and talk about the role of women in comics right now and how it needs to get better.
Yeah.
And so you've got, you know, thousands of Marvel fanboys and girls sitting in there to listen to this discussion take place.
I would have just cried tears of joy if I were in that room. I don't know. I mean, I think it's necessary. I had a student ask me today if there was a male version of the Bechdel test, and I had to stop what I was doing and take a couple deep breaths before I answered that question. But yeah, I think that, I don't know. I mean,
two or more men who don't mention sports or beer.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I answered that question as gently as I could, but it was, you know, yeah, we need more representation in a lot of areas. I don't know. We talked about including female characters in ways that were not stereotypical the other day. And, you know, the conversation led to, you know, sex and gender and race and all kinds of things and, you know, how to write people that are not stereotypes and stuff like that. And I don't know.
That's a good lesson for just in general. Yeah. How do you avoid stereotyping any character?
Exactly.
Or falling back on the cliches.
Exactly. That's kind of what we were talking about. Like, you know, the last time you wrote a story was this character's heterosexualness the central conflict. You know what I mean? Or was their whiteness the central conflict? Usually that's not the case. So why would you, you know, write a story in the reverse? I think it's a good lesson. I do it every time I have a class. At first, I think that the students kind of freak out a little bit because, you know, they are forced to sit in a room where I tell them this kind of stuff. But I think they come around, you know, hopefully.
I think they need that.
Me too.
I mean, how do you write a detective fiction novel without falling back on the elements of Dashiell Hammett?
Especially with what you just said, actually, I was thinking about it, you know, and I just imagined, you know, like the guy drinking whiskey and smoking a cigarette, being the detective as, you know, like a sultry woman walked in needing a case to be solved. I'm like, oh, God, don't do this. One of the things that we talk about really, really early on is acknowledging the types of stories that are already out there. They get told over and over and over again, because you've got to know that, you know, it's near impossible to write something that's 100% original. You know what I mean? It's like, of course, something that you write is going to be really similar to something that somebody else did. And I think really embracing what has come before you and actually researching it and understanding where, you know, that text is coming from will help you sort of, you know, be able to frame things in a different way so that your piece is just as relevant.
No, that's a good thought, is know the context, be mindful of the cliches.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Then you can break them.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was saying. You're better at stating that than I am today. I'm very tired. But those were the words I wanted.
No, you had to teach this morning. It's all good.
It's like I got home and I immediately logged on to do this. There was really no period of decompression or anything.
So we can go back to something then that, you know, you're more awake for, let's say. Okay?
Sure thing, sure thing.
I have never actually watched Sherlock, but I know so many people are obsessed with it. What is the appeal of this telling of Holmes?
I think that the character, I know I mentioned this earlier, but the character psychology is, character psychology is something that will keep me reading a story and will make me read a story or a book or a comic or just anything over and over again. Because when, you know, just the subtle intricacies of a character's thoughts just sort of come out in their gestures and their tone and, you know, the choices they make. I don't know. I love that stuff. I'm a sucker for it. So for me, this particular telling of Sherlock, I love it so much because, you know, the psychology is just so clear. Like you watch and it's almost like every single movement is deliberate. Every single tap, every single like gentle touch or whatever it is that's going on. Now I'm getting like overly weird, but I don't know. I think that it all matters, and you know, all writing should matter the same way. I mean, if your character is going to do something, they should be doing it for a reason, not just, you know, walking into a room for the sake of, you know, somebody delivering some kind of exposition. So I don't know, the reason why I like, to answer your question, actually, the reason why I like it so much is because I think that everything has a reason. And not all television does. Not all stories do.
I'm walking into this room now, and now I'm walking out.
No, it's like, you know what I mean? You ever read a story where it's just, you know, the character walks in front of a mirror and the only reason they walk in front of that mirror is so we could get some kind of ridiculous, like, you know, Gerald, 32, has long dark hair and blue eyes. Like, no, stop doing this. This is not why mirrors were invented. They were not to be abused in your story.
I can counter that. There is one story that uses mirrors effectively to do that.
Oh, tell me what it is. I want to use it as an example.
Quantum Leap.
Oh my gosh. I love Quantum Leap when I was younger. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up. So I can follow that, and that's an important part of the plot and the development of the character from episode to episode. I'm talking about when it's for no reason other than to just satisfy.
No, you're right. It goes against, it goes with what you were saying. It's there for a reason.
My favorite episodes were the ones where, and I'm not entirely sure how many times this happened. I might be making this up, but the episodes where he came back as a woman and just looked in the mirror and sort of like touched his chest a little bit. This is hilarious. Thanks, Scott Bakula.
But it wasn't done in a sexual way. It was done as in the, this is weird.
Oh my word. Yeah.
I always wondered what it would be like. This is surprise, because it's sudden for him. Well, this is new.
Do you remember the episode where, oh my gosh, I think he came back as a vampire and couldn't actually see his reflection?
I don't think it was vampire, but I want to say it's the Stephen King episode.
Oh my gosh.
Where he's being stalked by the devil.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is. Oh my gosh, I kind of wish that it was him as a vampire and not being able to see. Maybe, I don't know. I need to go back. I need to watch this. I think it's on Netflix now.
About two-thirds of it is. But they do have the great ones, such as him being transported into the body of a monkey.
I don't remember that one.
Which is a wonderful, goofy episode, if only to see a monkey with a handgun at the end threatening these evil NASA people.
Oh gosh, I am so looking forward to this. I know how I'm going to spend my Saturday night. I'm not ashamed.
Because it's not a bad series.
Mm-mm.
When it was good, it was good.
I know! Was it Ziggy the computer?
Ziggy was the computer.
Yeah. What a good name.
If I could cosplay, that would be one I would want to do at a con, would be Al.
Oh,
get a
man.
Really funky 90s shirt, and then you can, I looked it up, you can buy the handheld recorder for Ziggy.
That's awesome.
For around $100, you can get one that lights up and has the sound effects.
Oh, man.
So I'd just be wanting to walk around a con, like, hitting the thing with a cigar in my mouth and going, damn it, Ziggy!
You've got to do
Exhibit
it.
Exhibit Hall C!
I feel like everybody should have at least one cosplay that they can just kind of grab at will.
What would
and
be
just
yours?
Go for it. Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon.
Why? He's an asshole.
You know what? I don't care. But I look really good in a suit and white glasses. I mean, this is totally selfish, so I mean, that's my reasoning, honestly.
No, you got to play to your strengths with cosplay.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I my hair is blue right now, but before we dyed it blue, I was going in with the tuxedo mask picture, and I was like, this is the haircut I want, just do this. That's what the lady was doing for me for like 6 months, I want to say. I had the tuxedo mask going on. It was really exciting.
Oh. Are there other ones that you would do?
Oh man, probably some Final Fantasy VII stuff. I mean, let's bring it back to, I think it was 1996, 1997. Definitely, that it happened. I'm gonna date myself a little bit because I think it came out when I was in middle school, and it was the first video game that I really sat down, other than the original Legend of Zelda, and I played for just hundreds and hundreds of hours, and I just feel like, I don't know, being one of those characters would be awesome too. I mean, maybe it's just because it happened for me at like such a pivotal point. Maybe if it happened later or earlier, I wouldn't have gotten into it as much. I know I was hot and cold with it because I was starting to get into tabletop gaming at that point too. And it's really hard to divert your attention to different 100-hour tasks.
So you were part of a hardcore gamer group then.
Oh, man. I guess that's been around. Yeah, for me, for quite some time. Huh. I never really thought about it like that, but yeah, since I was much younger, a little teenager, yeah.
What was your entry point?
I think it was D&D version 2.0. I think that was it.
So not AD&D 2.0?
AD&D 2.0.
Yeah, second edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my gateway drug as well.
I still have my character sheets. I look at them fondly once in a while.
I have a text file on my computer of some of my best. I just left them there.
Yep. It's weird. I don't know. I try to explain this to people that have never done it before, and you know, just explaining like how immersive it actually is, and they're like, "You're just swinging fake swords at each other. What are you doing?" Like, no, that's not it. I swear.
I think it's a great tool for writers.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I'm not talking about writing the storylines for quests and everything, but my favorite part was always character creation.
Yep. Oh, I loved it. Absolutely. I would spend so many hours doing that kind of stuff. Yeah. I don't know, like exactly what you were saying. I think it's a really awesome teaching tool. And if I had more time with my students, I would definitely use it in my classroom for sure.
I had a signature for all my characters, and that was they had some kind of undefined mental disorder. I'm curious if you had a signature for your characters.
The exact one that you just said.
So, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I have good answer. Yeah. Thanks for giving that.
Okay, so what were some of your insanities? Let's compare fictional insanities.
Okay, so my favorite was the obsessive compulsive mages. you know, would be trying to cast a spell, but in order to cast the spell, they had to like wave their hands a certain number of times in this really specific motion. I'm loving this right now. I'm loving that we're talking about this. Things have to be just right, or else we cannot have magic missile. I remember one time I was playing my character like that, and just like she had to know everything that was going on all the time. And there was one day we were just playing through a campaign, and I forgot to tell the DM that we had just gotten off of a boat. And we were exploring some island, and I forgot to say that I was carrying my books off of the boat. And he destroyed the boat with all of my magic books on it as punishment to me. And that hurt. That was a bad day.
That's a fun DM, though.
Oh, he was great. He was great. But yeah, that was rough. I learned my lesson to not be a jerk. Yeah. Don't ever leave your books on the boat, guys. Don't do it. Your DM will destroy that boat so fast.
That's a quote for the ages on this show.
That should definitely be in the promo for the episode, Frankie.
I think so.
Don't leave your books on the boat.
Or the DM will just sink it, you know?
Yeah, I can't remember if he sank it or if the boat was just captured by pirates. Something happened, and that boat was gone. And so was my hope.
I would do things like I had a pixie, because we were just fooling around in one of those teenage sugar high nights where you're just like, loaded up on Mountain Dew and such. And I had a pixie from the Humanoids book, second edition, and his quirk was that he enjoyed taking showers in horse piss. And one of the other characters had a penchant for ripping its wings off, and they would magically grow back after they were ripped off.
I'm just happy that we've really bookended the episode, because we started with shit and we're ending with horse piss.
Oh, we're midway through the program and we're already talking about piss and everything, you know?
This is good.
I got kicked out of a Vampire the Masquerade party, actually. I got kicked out for playing a Malkavian far too well. For those who don't know, Malkavians were the ones who, when they transformed from human to vampire, lost part of their brains. And I had, in my group, I had the highest firearms rating, but no one would dare give me a gun. Because, to give you an idea of my character, I would go around biting the sides of buildings because bricks were red. Blood is red. Therefore, bricks are blood.
Oh my gosh, this logic. I'm jealous.
I found, though, that as the years have gone on, my love of tabletop gaming died.
Oh, that's sad. I know what you mean. I think, you know what, I think I love it just as much, but I just haven't done it in such a long time that I would be awful at it.
I love it, but I don't have the time to invest in it anymore.
Yeah. Oh, what happened to us? Jeez.
Adulthood.
Gross.
I know.
Getting our hot wives and stuff. This is awful.
I know. Dealing with cat shit every day, you know?
No, it's horse piss.
Yeah.
Who have we become?
My 18-year-old self would be disappointed.
Mine would just be happy I had a job, I think. I don't know. Oh, man. I think about it. I don't know. I think that I'm pretty much doing the stuff that I thought I would end up doing. I'm not too far off. I think I'm okay.
I'm not too complaining right now. I'm kind of
If you wanted to complain, I would listen.
Oh, I'm sure you would, but no, I'm genuinely here at the end of the year, December, I take assessment of life. I'm okay with things right now.
Yeah, you know, I did this the other day, and I had a really good year this year. I think that next year I'm going to focus on writing a hell of a lot more than I did this year, and that's really the only, you know, I know a lot of people get really resolution-y at the end of the year, but that's really the only thing that I would change, just making a little bit more time to write.
I'd try to keep my resolutions reasonable.
Yeah. Don't leave my books on the boat, you know?
Don't leave my books on the boat. clean the Safta Cat's box a little more often than I do.
Oh, man. You've got to try. It's this brand called World's Best Cat Litter. You've got to do it. I made a change. My life has never been the same. I don't know. It's just this cat litter. It changed. It revolutionized the way that I clean the box.
What's so special about it?
I don't know what it's made of other than wishes, but like you don't smell the awful smell, and it does what it's supposed to do. It's just, I don't know, it's just the best. It's very expensive, but that's a trick because you don't need as much as you normally would. So if you get over the psychological part of it being more expensive, it really is the world's best cat litter.
I'll have to go looking for it.
I hope you find it.
Just to try it.
Oh, it's the best. They even have a lavender scented one. Okay, like this is real. This is a real thing that I hope happens soon for you.
No, it's made from whole kernel corn.
It's good. It's natural, and right. There's no dust.
Great. So he's going to be pooping out corn kernels now too.
No. Ugh. Oh, that's so gross. I thought it, and I was like, I hope he doesn't say it. That's gross.
Look, we open the show 2 minutes in. I'm talking about shit, and then we get into horse piss. Of course, I'm going to go for the. You know, kernel poop now.
I mean, look, if it's on the table, let's go. I mean, this is what we're doing right now. This is what we're talking about. I can't complain. I could be doing worse things.
This is the end of 2014 for us, you know, on the show. Last episode of the year. Let's get out all the crap now.
Let's just get all the crap. Let's just get through it. Yeah, just apply that world's best cat litter and you're in good shape.
Exactly. We'll apply it to this program. World's best podcasting litter.
Are you excited about the upcoming holidays? Are you a fan of those?
I am. And it's because I'm a Christmas baby, so.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, so.
My reaction was just to say, really?
Really?
My dad was born on Christmas Eve, and I think that that contributed to his general attitude about life. he was not happy. I think his birthday is not a pleasant day.
Yeah, I could see that. I have a friend who was born on Christmas Eve, and like him, I get shafted in present load, so.
That's sad. I'm sorry. You know, I've got to send you some of this world's best cat litter. I really do. I think it would be an appropriate gift.
There you go. Instead of sending me shit, you send me the litter.
Look, my gifts always mean something, okay? I try really hard.
I'll just make sure not to open it in front of you.
That's such a weird thing. I hate it. I wish I could just take all of Christmas and open it in a secret room, honestly. I know that's weird, but I don't care.
Did you do that as a child?
No, it's weird. It's like, of course I'm thinking way too hard about what other people are thinking, especially for a person that doesn't care what other people think, really. But it's just strange, like, to have people anticipating your reaction. And I always wonder, you know, am I smiling enough? Am I expressing enough gratitude for the level of the gift that I've received? Like, that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Well, let me help you out a little, because I'm someone who loves seeing someone open the gift.
Oh, man. Okay. This is a good perspective then to get.
For me, it gives me great pleasure to see their reaction of delight or surprise or confusion until you tell them the significance of the gift, and then to watch that reaction in them.
That's really tender and a loving thing to do, I think. That's very sweet. I can see where you're coming from 100%. See, it's not that I have resting bitch face, because I know people that have that. It's not me. But I don't know, like, I'm not as emotionally expressive. You know, I can get it all out on the page, but when it comes to, you know, human interaction, I'm a little weird about that kind of stuff. And so for me, it's like, I always feel like I'm letting the person down a little bit, you know, like, I'm not excited. I'm not expressing enough excitement, even though I'm really excited. So I don't know, that is my worry. Like I'm not looking surprised enough at the exciting present.
I wonder if you can shut that off and just be able to just let go in it.
I'm going to, now that we're talking about it and, you know, the whole world that's listening to the podcast knows about it. I'm going to work really hard on that this holiday season. I'm going to really give it a shot. Yeah. I wish. That's like the story of my life. I kind of wish I could just shut it off and just kind of go about my business.
As long as the person doesn't throw the gift in my face or punch me or hit me with it or something.
Has that ever happened to you? Do you have a frame of reference for this?
Maybe in jest, like if it's like a fly swatter or something, you know.
Okay. Because I don't know, I don't think I've ever gotten anybody anything and they've been like really mad at me, but I kind of wish that I don't know, it just sounds like a funny thing to be able to say that it happened to you. So now I kind of, like, I don't know.
Everybody's re-gifted a gift. I've done it. You know?
That's true. We got a humidifier one year. If you live in the humid state of Florida, you know that a humidifier is not something that you need. I think I got gloves one year, too, from a family member. I'm like, okay, you really don't understand, do you, where I live right now? I don't know.
It depends. It depends on the type of glove.
It was a winter glove. It was a leather winter glove. I mean, it's really nice. I just, you know, I've worn them once, maybe one time in 7 or 8 years since I've gotten them.
Hey, you know, I live in South Florida as well, and I keep a set of winter clothes just in case.
I mean, yeah, I own some jackets. I own them now because I visit people that live in the tundra of the, you know, upper states. But, you know, yeah, it was just weird. I don't know. But other than that, I don't think I've really gotten anything that I've ever returned or taken back for any. Huh.
That kills my question of what are the worst gifts you've ever received?
The humidifier, but they meant well, so I wasn't angry. You know, I don't know. I think that, let me preface this by saying that I grew up and spent most of my adult life in a poverty situation. And so it's sort of like, just the idea of like getting a thing is really, really, really cool for me. So I don't know. I have like a very skewed perspective as far as like, you know, maybe I have gotten shitty gifts, but for me, I'm just like, oh, there's stuff. I have a possession. I own a thing. That's cool. So that kind of clouds it a little bit.
If someone could give you the best gift at the holidays, what would you want?
I would really, really think it was cool to be able to go to a writer's retreat. Like have somebody just say, here, just go to this thing. Here's your ticket. Just go. Like, that would be really, really nice just to get some peace and quiet. Or a gift certificate to the local tattoo parlor. I'm pretty simple. So
Or the local comic shop.
Or the local comic shop. But see, that's the thing. It's like, it's weird. The comics I'll buy on my own, but I love tattoos, but I don't really go as often as I would like.
And they're expensive.
So that would get me there. It is. Every time I go, I end up spending a few hundred dollars. I'm really happy when I leave. But yeah, it's I don't get small tattoos. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe if I just got tiny tattoos, I wouldn't have this issue. It's been like, you know, less than $100 and I'd be satisfied. But
how many do you have?
I think 9 or 10, but a lot of them are big.
Like really, full really back? Big.
No, I haven't gone there yet. Because this is really weird. Like I have to be able to see them doing it so I feel better. And I don't have I recently moved to Central Florida. I have a tattoo artist in Fort Lauderdale that I love, but you know, so I would let him tattoo my back because you know I trust him, but I don't trust anybody else. I'm like, I have to be able to see what you're doing.
Don't most parlors have like a mirror or something that can prop up for when they do back tattoos?
I've never seen that before.
I would think that would be, but then I've never gotten inked, so I have no idea.
You would have to, well, because if they're doing your back, you're probably laying on your stomach, so they would have to have a mirror on the ground and then a mirror on the ceiling. So I don't know. I don't know the logistics of this, how this would work.
I guess
sometimes you lean over. I don't know. For the really long ones, though, you're laying down because you're sitting in there for, you know, 5 or 6 hours, maybe more.
What's the largest one that you have?
I did, oh man, I can sit for a really long time, but the tattoo artist has to take like smoke breaks sometimes, or like they need a break, which I understand. But I think the biggest one I got was it's the one on my right arm. I have a big, I'm going to out my nerdiness even more now. So I have a giant three-eyed crow tattoo on my right arm, and it's pretty big. And I think we went for about 4 hours just doing like the outlining and some of the shading before we quit. And I love that one. It might be my favorite, actually.
What's the reference, The Three-Eyed Crow?
The Song of Ice and Fire series, the Game of Thrones television show, for those of you that do not read the books. That is a recurring image. It is an important image that repeats itself, and we are just now 5 books in, starting to understand what it means.
But it's cool looking, and that's all that matters.
Oh, hell yeah. It's a giant crow with an extra eye in the middle. What an awesome tattoo. I'll take it. That's good.
And hey, that's what tattoos are all about, in my opinion, is significance, but also it just looks really cool.
Every single tattoo I have, it doesn't have like a story behind it, but it's about a good story. You know what I mean? That sentence makes sense, I think. So like I have a couple of book tattoos, and I have a couple of video game tattoos and like that kind of stuff. One of my, actually, I was thinking about this just now. I totally forget that I have it, but I've got this quarter sleeve on my leg, this Dark Tower tattoo, and it's got like Roland's revolver and like the tower and the red roses and all that fun stuff. And I like that one too.
So the video game tattoos based on games that have good, are they based on games that have good stories, or there are games that have good memories and stories for you?
Both. I've got a couple Legend of Zelda-ish tattoos, and that was really big for me. I don't know. When I was growing up, my father, we didn't really, I don't know. I don't have a lot of like dad memories, but like one of the cool things that I do remember us doing together is playing original Nintendo Legend of Zelda. And he's just an excellent visual artist, but you know, he doesn't really draw, which makes me sad, but he used to make his own maps. Like this was before Nintendo Power and like all this kind of stuff. So he was just making these gorgeous maps of like all of the dungeons and like all of these things. And I had them for a really long time. I don't have them anymore. I wish I did, but it's just, I don't know. It's like a really happy memory for me. And like, there will always be Zelda games as long as there is Nintendo. So I get to revisit that, you know, every couple of years when they come out with a new one.
I've talked about this on the program before, is that you don't really get a tattoo unless there's a reason for it, because you're going to have it for life. So don't make the choice blindly.
Oh yeah. Now that being said, my face, I kind of don't want them there, but like everywhere else, I'd be cool with it. I really, really would. So I don't know. I've got a lot of space left. I just don't have infinite funding, which is why you can see skin, but that's okay.
Again, I've never been a fan of the face neck tattoos myself. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, yeah, I've had for a really long time, like face piercings and things like that, but I don't know what it is. There's just something about it. I'm like, I don't know. I like looking at my face. I think my face is all right the way it is. I don't need any more. I don't need any more stuff in it.
I don't need augmentation.
It. Yeah, I got a little bit, but I mean, I don't need any more. I'm
set with this. I'm cool with this now.
Well, it goes even further. Like, I don't even wear makeup actually either. I just sort of, I don't know, like the idea of like covering up what my face actually looks like sort of bothers me a little bit. So there is that.
What face piercings do you have?
I have, I took my two, I had two in my eyebrows that I took out recently, because when you get haircuts, it is 100% going to happen every single time that they're going to forget that they're there and they're going to comb your hair in front of your face and they are going to hit them, which is the worst ever. And I just was kind of getting sick of that. And like, I like getting haircuts. I don't like that. But I have the septum one still. I kind of forget that it's there, except when I get sick and I'm blowing my nose all the time. Like, why do I have this in my nose?
You're not helping.
Yeah, like, come on, thing. What are you doing? I'm sick. Just stop it.
It's hard enough for us to get the mucus out, and now you're blocking it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I've always liked this kind of stuff. I'll like it forever, I'm sure. But
to each their own. As long as you're cool with it, I have no problem with you.
Yeah, that's a good way to live. That's a good philosophy to live by. Well, see, that it's really weird that you say that because, you know, a lot of employers sort of frown on it. And before I started teaching, I had a really hard time because I was working like retail management and just all this weird stuff. And, you know, they were not happy. And it's so weird, like, you know, having to sort of explain that, you know, having these things doesn't interfere with my ability to, you know, do my job. I mean, I'm glad I have a job now where, you know, they don't care what I look like or, you know, things like that. But
as
it was always
really
weird. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm a good teacher. I actually, you know, it's really weird saying this, but, you know, like I've had my hair a different color, a non-natural color for the last 17 or 18 years of my life. So it's sort of like, you know, with like a very brief, you know, maybe 6 month run of black hair in between. So I just kind of forget that it's there like that. And other people sort of remind me like, wow, it's really cool to have a teacher with, you know, blue hair, or purple hair or whatever. And I'm like, huh, I guess it is cool. I don't know what that feels like, but I guess it's cool. I don't know.
And it doesn't do anything to remove the power and respect in the classroom. You're still the authority figure in the room.
People worry about that. They ask me about that a lot, actually. Like what my classroom dynamic is like, because I, you know, I go in with like my video game T-shirt, and I sort of, you know, I don't really. Sometimes I wear like a fancy jacket over my video game T-shirt, but let's be honest, it's hot, so I don't always. But I think that as long as you know that you know what you're talking about, it doesn't matter what you look like or what you wear. You know, I know a lot of people that say that like women have a harder time teaching than men do. And I can totally understand where they're coming from and stuff like that. But I don't think I've ever run into an issue like that, you know, where it's really mattered. But I don't know. It's just one of those things. Like, I feel like authority is just a weird, it's just a thing that we make up. I don't know. I'm saying weird stuff now, but it's sort of like, I didn't really approach it this way when I wasn't teaching creative writing, but now that I am, I think that, you know, my goal is to, you know, elevate the work of my students to a publishable place. Like, that's where I want them to be. That's where I want me to be. And so in that regard, yeah, you know, I do have a lot to share with them as far as helping them do that, especially being an editor and, you know, getting to bring that to the table too. Like, you know, I do both. I write also, so I can help you with that, but I also edit, and I know what editors are looking for, so I can also help you as far as, you know, what kinds of writing is more marketable than other kinds and stuff like that. But I feel like I sort of coach them more than I am an authority, if that makes sense. Like, I know that there are some people that, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, you act like you're, you know, they're your friend, and, you know, you can't teach effectively that way. But I'm like, that's not it either. I don't think that that's what I'm doing, but I don't know. It's a good balance of just accepting that, you know, they are or attempting to be, you know, scholars and masters in their field. And I respect that a ton. And I think that they respect me back because of that.
I understand where you're coming from. I have in my syllabus, science says we don't have to be friends, but being friendly toward one each other is going to make this a lot better.
Yep. Exactly. I don't understand, like, when people have adversarial relationships with their students, it makes me really sad because, you know, you're missing out on getting to learn from, you know, what that student has to contribute, and they're missing out on you. Like if I didn't teach at a university, I'd be in a much different situation. I would handle the room and, you know, our interaction much differently. But the fact that I teach college level students, you know, I get to come in under the assumption that we're all adults and we can handle stuff. We can handle responsibility, and like, I don't need to remind them constantly that, you know, I'm the important person, because I'm not. Like, their work is the most important thing, I think, in the room, not me and even what I have to tell them. So I don't know. I try to work with that
and have a little fun in the process.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. We this is not pedagogically sound, probably, but so last month, or the last class that I taught, it was the very last day, and we were just we were workshopped out. I mean, we had just done, I think it was 15 pieces we workshopped in 1 week. And it was just, it was so much. And everybody was tired. And I'm like, you know what, guys, just, you know, it normally would have been like a lab day. And I was like, just come in. I've got some food. We're going to play some video games. And I brought in my, it was the day that Super Smash Brothers got released for the Wii U. And I brought it in and we played it on the giant screen. We had a Smash Brothers tournament. And it was awesome. And, I was like, guys, we have busted our asses with good storytelling. Now we're going to compete for this actual Super Smash Brothers cardboard championship belt. And we did. And it was good.
Hey, you can get away with it. Have a little bit of fun with it. So I think that's a good way to end it, because I think this sums up basically the show is, hey, if you can get away with it, have a little bit of fun with it.
Absolutely.
So before we go though, Nicole, what you got coming up? I know you got some stuff coming up down the pike that's gonna be big.
Oh man. Do you mean like self-promotion kind of stuff? Like,
you know, take a moment here, you know.
All right, guys. So I worked really, really hard all year sending my stuff out for publication. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of submissions. And because of that, I have 3 different book projects coming out in 2015. Which is the coolest thing ever. I feel like a rap star. My albums are all dropping, guys. But I don't know. It's really cool. So I have a chapbook coming out with Finishing Line Press, and you can pre-order that currently. I'm not sure the date that the podcast will air, but I think that the pre-orders for that are over on the 17th. But the book comes out January 30th, and then I'm not sure about the release dates on the others yet, but it's one is a visual poetry collection, so it's not illustrations, but that's a conversation for another day. It's a graphic narrative, but poetry, and the other is a nonfiction book, and I'm very excited about those things.
Kick ass. So where can the folks find you on the web?
Oh my gosh. If you want, I have a website. It's very intuitive. It's NicoleOquendo.com, and you can contact me there and we can be friends. And then, there's a link on that site to a bunch of online publications. If you feel like reading the weird stuff that I make. And now that I've just said that, I have to make sure that I update it. And I spent the better part of the year blogging about all the places I actually submitted work to at a website called timetopublish.com. So you can find some stuff there if you want information about the different markets that I've been throwing my work at.
And you're on Facebook and the Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Please do. Please find me on the Facebook and the Twitter. Absolutely.
What's your handle on Twitter?
It is Nicole OQ. At Nicole OQ.
Not that unintuitive as well.
Yeah, easy peasy. I'm a good person. If you want to talk to me, we can be friends.
You're not that hard to find.
Nope. I have a digital footprint. It exists.
Well, Nicole, it has been a pleasure talking with you this afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. You're fantastic.
It's been a lot of fun here being complete nerds with each other and alienating probably 90% of our listeners.
Sorry, guys. We can talk about other stuff if you want later. Email me.
Hey, take care of yourself and have a good, you know, now rest up and watch Quantum Leap.
Oh, man. I'm going to get presents without being a jerk. It's going to be awesome.
All right. You do that. Take care of yourself.
You too.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.